Here we go. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you, Peter Sri. He's a father. You know that. Peter Sri and Mata Sri. Mata Vrinda Sri. Actually, it's a very exalted position to be a father or mother, isn't it? One should not be a guru, father, mother, worshipful deity, or whatever, until they're ready to liberate their dependents from the cycle of birth and death. Okay, so reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 29, text 5. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate
vasudevaya. Lokasya
Lokasya
Mityabhimater
Mityabhimater
Achakshushash
Achakshushash
Chiran
Prasuptasya
Prasuptasya Tamasi
Tamasi
Anashraye
Anashraye
Shrantasya
Shrantasya
Tamasu
Tamasu
Anuvidaya
Viha
Pam
Avirasihi
Kila
Yoga
Vaskaraha
Lokasya
Mityabhimatera Chakshushash
Lokasya Mityabhimatera Chakshushash
Chiram Prasuptasya Tamas Chiram prasuptasya tamasya nasraye Okay, when you have the Y at the end of a word and a vowel in the next word, it's tamasya nasraye. It's not tamasi, it's nasraye, just so everybody knows that. Chiram prasuptasya tamasya nasraye Shantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Shantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Vam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha
Vam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha
Lokasya mityabhimatera chakshushash
Lokasya mityabhimatera chakshushash
Chiram prasuptasya tamasya Chiram prasuptasya tamasya nasraye Shrantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Shrantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Tvam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha Lokasya mityabhimatera chakshushash
Lokasya mityabhimatera chakshushash
Chiram prasuptasya tamasya nasraye
Chiram prasuptasya tamasya nasraye
Shrantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Shrantasya karmasvanu vidya dhyaya
Tvam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha
Lokasya mitya avimite achakshusha
Lokasya mitya avimite achakshusha
Chiram prasuptasya tamasaya nasraya
Chiram prasuptasya tamasaya nasraya
Shrantasya karmasu anuvidyaya dhyaya
Shrantasya karmasu anuvidyaya dhyaya
Tvam avirasya kila yoga bhaskara
Tvam avirasya kila yoga bhaskara
Lokasya mitya abhimatera chakshusha
Lokasya mitya abhimatera chakshusha
Chiram prasutta tasya tamasya nasya.
Chiram prasutta tasya tamasya
Santasya karamsao anvidhyabhya.
Santasya karamsao anvidhyabhya.
Tavam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha.
Tavam avirasi kila yoga bhaskaraha.
Mitya abhimatehi, deluded by false ego. Achakshushah, blind. Chinam, for a very long time. Prasuptasya,
sleeping.
Tamasi,
in darkness.
Anashriye,
without shelter.
Shantasya, fatigued. Karmasu, to material activities. Anuvidya, attached. Niya, with the intelligence. Twam, you. Avirasihi, have appeared. Kila, indeed. Yoga, of the yoga system. Vaskaraha, the sun. Translation, my dear Lord, you are just like the sun, for you illuminate the darkness of the conditional life of the living entities. Because their eyes of knowledge are not open, they are sleeping eternally in that darkness without your shelter, and therefore they are falsely engaged by the actions and reactions of their material activities, and they appear to be very fatigued. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. It appears that Srimati Devahuti, the glorious mother of Lord Kapila Deva, is very compassionate for the regrettable condition of people in general, who not knowing the goal of life are sleeping in the darkness of illusion. It is the general feeling of Vaishnava, or devotee of the Lord, that he should awaken them. Similarly, Devahuti is requesting her glorious son to illuminate the lives of conditioned souls so that their most regrettable conditional life may be ended. The Lord is described herein as Yoga, Vaskara, the son of the system of all yoga. And Devahuti had already requested her glorious son to describe Bhakti Yoga, and the Lord has described Bhakti Yoga as the ultimate yoga system. Bhakti Yoga is the sun-like illumination for delivering the conditioned souls whose general condition is described here. They have no eyes to see their own interests. They do not know that the goal of life is not to increase the material necessities of existence, because the body will not exist more than a few years. The living entities are eternal, and they have their eternal need. If one engages only in caring for the necessities of the body, not caring for the eternal necessities of life, then he is part of a civilization whose advancement puts the living entities in the darkest region of ignorance. Sleeping in that darkest region, one does not get any refreshment, but rather gradually becomes fatigued. He invents many processes to adjust this fatigue condition, but he fails and thus remains confused. The only path for mitigating his fatigue and the struggle for existence is the path of devotional service, or the path of Krishna consciousness. So, Lokasya Mityadinateva Chakshushashtiram Vasuttasya Tamasya Nasraye Shantasya Kamasvaru Vidya Diya Swam Avirasi Kila Yoga Vaskaraha. So, Omagana Tumranda Shah Ganenjana Shlapya Chakshur Meditam Yenatasma Shigurave Maha. So, in the Teva Du Swarthi Vatim Vishnu Durashaya Yavihu Arkham Hanina Andar Yathandar Vaniya Mahaste Vishatadri Vandamdi. So, this is a very interesting verse. The Tevatu, Swarthagati, they don't know a Swartha, that their real interest, their personal interest, Gatim Vishnu, Durashaya Devahir Arkham Manina. So they're engaged in Bahir, the external activities of this material energy. They think that's the goal. And then Andaryathandar Vaniyamanas, then they enter into ignorance. So this is a very interesting description, that people are basically in the darkness of ignorance. And not only that, but they don't want to get out. That's the worst thing. Material Krishna, but those with Oba, with Obit Padyeta, Rahab, Adandagopir, Vishitam, Panishram, Punak Punas, Char Vitachar, Vananam. This is interesting. Another verse. And this verse says, Matir na Krishna. They don't want Krishna. Actually, they do want Krishna, but they don't know they want Krishna. Matir na, because they think that Krishna, or the ultimate goal, is actually present in this material energy. Matir na Krishna. So even though they may have good association, devotees may come up to them and say, chant Hare Krishna, or they may hear the philosophy of the Bhagavatam, Paratos Vitova. But they've taken a vow. What is that vow? Grahav Vratalam. And this is not in reference to Grahastas, it's in reference to Griha Medi. They've taken a vow to be tied by the, like Griha Medi means, like to be tied by the nose, like you tie a bull. And the bull walks around in circles all the time. This is how they do in India. I don't know if they do that here. To grind the grain and do other things like that. So it's like people are like that. And then Grahav Vratalam. So, anyway, so then punak punas charvita charvanam. So what they're doing is doing the same thing again and again, or chewing the chewed, as Prahlad Maharaj describes. So chewing the chewed means, sometimes we use this example of chewing gum. That when you first, I don't know if any of you chewed gum when you were young. I used to do it all the time. Because it was nice. You just put some sugar in your mouth. But after a while, the sugar runs out. And then all that's left is the gum. And you keep chewing it, and you're just hoping there's more sugar in it. So that's the nature of this material world. You chew gum when you're young. I think all the kids used to chew gum. We even blew bubbles, too, when I was young. You have bubble gum, too? So then after a while, the flavor runs out. But it's like that in the material world. As Krishna says in the Gita, that happiness in the mode of passion is like nectar in the beginning, and like poison at the end, and you just keep chewing, and nothing comes out. So there was one great personality, he's not a devotee, but he was a vegetarian, Einstein, who said, the definition of insanity is keep doing the same thing and think you're going to get a different result. Because he was speaking also of science, but also in the material world, it's like that too. You keep doing the same thing every day, especially when people retire, they go and play golf and think they're going to become happy, or go to the nightclubs. Last night we were entertained by some nice music at about midnight. You heard the music before? No, you didn't hear. This very nice, obnoxious music. And, you know, people think, yeah, by going there, they'll be happy. And then the next morning, they look like hell. It's like, isn't that, we were running into people who had just been in the nightclubs all night long, and they look like one of these road steamrollers rolled over them. They look like it. They have been to Yamaraj and come back. So that's called Punat Punas Charita Charitamrita. So what are people interested in? They're interested in the four goals of material life, and dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Moksha is also material because it's just the opposite side of the same thing. You're just trying to escape from pain. Moksha is not, at least the personal understanding of moksha, is not spiritual. It's just an escape from the pain. Just like sometimes people take escape by taking drugs, sometimes people take escape by going to sleep. You know, you see people who are really depressed, they just like sleep for 18, 19, 20 hours a day. That's their moksha. So that's something like moksha, sleeping. Anyway, so these are called the purusharthas. That means the goals of human beings. So we also have something called the panchama purushartha. So there's the four goals, and then there's the panchama, which means the fifth goal, and that's prema, Krishna prema. So, but people don't want to hear about these things. I mean, I'll give you an interesting story that's from the Greek literature. And this is from one of the dialogues of Socrates. I don't know if any of you heard of Socrates, but anyway, and Plato. But I'll tell you anyway the story. So once upon a time, this particular story is called The Cave that Plato wrote. It's about Socrates too. So once upon a time, everybody was living in a cave. A cave means very dark, there's no light. And so what happened is one particular individual, he happened to wander a little bit and he came out into the sun. They had never experienced the sun their whole lives. So they just like walked out, this particular individual, he walked out and he saw the sun. He said, wow, this is fantastic. This sunshine and light, all I saw before were shadows. And that's like the material world, because actually you're just seeing the shadow of reality. Or as Krishna describes in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you're seeing a reflection of reality. And that description given in the 15th chapter of the Gita is that of a banyan tree that is reflected on a body of water where the roots are up and, of course, the branches are down. And that banyan tree, you know, represents the material entanglement. So, in other words, we're in a reflected realm. Reflected means, just like in the mirror, things tend to be a little backwards. The right is left and left is right, right? When you look in the mirror. I mean, it's helpful when you're putting on makeup or tilak. But it's backwards. Like if you take a picture, it looks different than your mirror image. So in the same way, in the material world, everything is just like a little bit backwards. Not a little bit, very backwards. Love here, that you find portrayed in your Bollywood films, is actually the furthest thing from love. And what is the furthest thing? Lust. What does it mean by lust? To use someone as an object. That's what it is. Like if you look at pictures, like people look at these magazine pictures, one girl handed me a magazine when I was at the airport. A very nice lady. She's a reporter. I did an interview with her. Do you know her? What's her name? Ozzy something? Very nice. Nice lady. He handed me the magazine, and this is a picture of all these models of the magazine. I said, what kind of magazine is this for a sannyasi to do? I mean, is she testing my determination? It's like, how do you now stop work? I said, I mean, what kind of test is this? Anyway, the ladies weren't that attractive, so it wasn't a problem. So anyway, but they were like objects for people to lust after. That's the point. I mean, nobody wants to be an object. You want to be a subject. Object means like, you know, this table here, or this chair. That's an object. I mean, you just use it. Or like my mobile phone. It's an object. And when the mobile phone gets old or it's not useful anymore for some reason, it's called planned obsolescence. You heard about that before? When the scientists design products now, they design them to go bad after some time. Otherwise, they would make money. Did you know that? Otherwise, I mean, how are they going to make money? Just like you have these disposable razors now, right? And they could design them so they would last for several years, but they want them to oxidize, you know, the blade to oxidize. So after 3 or 4 shaves, you start cutting yourself. And then you got to throw it away and get another one. But if they designed a razor you could use for 20 years, the razor company would go bankrupt. Isn't it true? Or the cars, if they didn't break down, and, you know, if a new car didn't break down after some time, and, you know, then the car companies wouldn't have any money. So anyway, so getting back to the point, so we treat the cars like objects, and they go bad. You know, that's life. And so then also we treat people like that too. We use them, we squeeze out whatever juice we can get from them. We're not talking about Rajasas, you know, people. But actually, they used to eat people here, so that was also the same thing. Right? Cannibals, they would eat people. So we're more sophisticated. Instead of eating people, we just use people. And when they get old, you know, throw them out. It's like the bees in the beehive. You know what they do with old bees? Does anyone know? They throw them out. Have you ever taken anyone here know about bees? No. None of you are farmers. What's the use? You have bees in India or? No. You must have bees in India. He says there's no bees in India. I got bitten by the bees in India. What India are you from? So, just like the bees, when they're called the worker bees. And so when the worker bees, you know, they can't fly anymore. It's not that they take them to an old bees home. You know, old bees home. The bees can just like be taken care of for the rest of their life. They just throw them out of the hive and you find them on the ground. It's like that. And so human beings act like that too in an uncultured civilization. When someone gets old and useless, or when your wife is not pretty anymore. I mean, it's interesting, the gopis were saying that a woman's beauty only lasts for a short time. They've seen that in relationship. Krishna won't be interested in us anymore. But fortunately enough, the gopis, for their spiritual body, they never got old. But the rest of us get old. So we generally treat people like objects. And even sometimes, and even in spiritual organizations, people try to get as much as they can from a person, and then when they can't produce anymore, then go back to your home to your mother, or daughter, or son, or something like that, isn't it? This is very bad. So that's what lust is. You know, the lusty, romantic affairs are actually looking at the person just like an object to use to get some enjoyment from. And then when the object is no longer enjoyable, when there's no more sugarcane juice in it, no more juice in the relationship, then you see even like with these Bollywood stars, didn't they switch wives and husbands? Quite a bit. Hollywood's the same thing. There was one famous actress in Hollywood, her name was Elizabeth Taylor, I'm sure you've heard of her. maybe you haven't, it doesn't matter. And she had like 8, 10 husbands or something like that. She's, you know, as people got worn out and you got tired of them, you just get a new one. Like I get new mobile phones, new computers. Husbands and wives are the same thing. Why not trade them in, you know? You know, it's like in America, we have these newspapers where you can buy used cars. I'm sure you have that here, too. And you say, well, I've been using this car, so let me advertise it and see if someone else will buy it, then I'll buy a new one. So that's lust in the material world. So it's not love. So in other words, the reflection of love or prema in the spiritual world is the lowest thing in the material world, the lowest, like, despicable thing that's just completely exploitative. And that's what you find glorified in modern society. You know, the heroes of modern society are the actors and actresses who portray this disgusting, mundane, conjugal relationship. You know, people look up to them more than they look up to politicians. Politicians are in the mode of passion, and actors are in the mode of ignorance. Did you know that? Just like I was in India, and I've been around some of the actors and actresses, Bollywood people, not because I'm a fan, but because, you know, anyway, I'm using them to collect money for the projects in India. I'm using them. Anyway, so, see, I'm guilty of the same thing. So, no, then, anyway, so I'm cultivating them, is a better word. So, but then they're surrounded by these paparazzis. You know what a paparazzi is? Paparazzi means these photographers who just every second. I was with Vivek Oberoi, and he's twirling his mustache, and they go. I mean, so I don't want to criticize, but anyway, some of these actors are so vain. It's incredible. It's incredible. I mean, even I'm a guru, and I don't get some of the pictures taken of me like that. There's more photographers around taking pictures. So, in modern society, that is actually what is extolled, is something high, the lust. That means modern society is at the lowest point. Because previously, the Brahmins were admired, or the Kshatriyas were admired for their heroic skills. And therefore, those people became the role models of society. You know what a role model is? A role model is what the people look up to. Like what you want to be, like if you're a child, what you want to be when you grow up. Like I had role models when, you know, some of mine were like firemen, you know, fire brigade people. Because they were saved people. At least it was heroic. But nowadays the role models for kids are actually far worse. Far worse. I mean, they watch television and they get into the, I would like to be like this demon, Ravana or whatever. So, anyway, so that's why society is falling apart. So the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. Everything has a counterpart in the spiritual world. Whether it's friendship, and in the material world, friendship is exploiting someone. What they say, a fair weather friend. In the spiritual world, you're the friend of Krishna no matter what he wants, what he does, what he wants. In other words, Srimati Radharani, who is in the conjugal relationship, she says, you know, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace. You may leave me brokenhearted. You're completely free to do anything and everything. So that's the spiritual world. Anyway, so anyway, getting back to the point, is that the material world is a perverted reflection. And as a result of being a perverted reflection, it gives an indication or a chaya or a shadow of the possibility for enjoyment. That's the problem with the material world. So, therefore, so getting back to that example of that man who walked out of the cave and saw the light, he said, wow, I've just been looking at shadows before. So then he went back into the cave and thought, you know, I got to help my friends. So he went back in the cave and said, hey, there's a real world out there. And his friend said, get the hell out of here. You're disturbing us and our enjoyment. But he kept preaching to them. There's a real world. And I'm adding to the story. Finally, they killed him. So, even though he was interested in that, that's not part of the book, but anyway, I'm adding that, you know, just to make the story spicy. So, so that's the point, that a spiritualist is not very much, very much appreciated in this world. But we have to somehow or other carry out this service of trying to help people, having compassion, regardless of what people think about us. Like Prabhupada was very strong about that. Regardless of what people think about it, regardless of what people take us to court or do anything, we have to be very determined to try to help people. That's the compassion of a Vaishnava. Like Haridas Thakur, being whipped in 22 marketplaces, he was still trying to help the people who were whipping him. So much compassion. I mean, and Vasudev Dutt, who is the basically the personification of pure love. And if you want to find out what unalloyed, I'm trying to remember the term Prabhupada used, it's universal. He said universal love. You know, we all talk about love. If you want to find out about universal love, he said he is universal love personified. That means everyone. Vidya, Vidya, Sampani, Brahmani, Gaudi, Harshani, Shuni, Chaiva, Svapati, Cha, Pandita, Samadarshani. He saw all living entities equally. The learned, gentle Brahman, cow, outcast, dog, dog eater, etc. Svapati. So, this is what we have to become to actually become Krishna conscious. Loving all living entities. If you hate anyone, that's mundane and material. So that's a devotee. And regardless of what someone does to you, negative or positive, you have to maintain that loving attitude. That's the price. And that's sankhya. That is sankhya. So whoever you see, whoever you meet, give them Krishna consciousness. Yari deka tari va Krishna pradesh. Amara gai goro guru hai tore desh. That Lord Chaitanya says, wherever you go, whatever country, Krishna Pradesh, give people Krishna. Doesn't matter. But you have to figure out a way to give them so they're not too agitated. In other words, you have to sugarcoat the pill sometimes. Just like Narada Muni sugarcoated the pill with Dhruva Maharaj. He said, all right, you want a kingdom greater than that of your great-grandfather? Fine. Chant this mantra. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And Dhruva Maharaj, he sugarcoated the pill. He didn't tell him, you got to be a pure devotee, you're in absolute ignorance. This is all Maya, Dhruva Maharaj. Snap out of it, anyway, he didn't say that. He said, well, here, just chant his mantra. So we can be the same way in preaching. Chant his mantra, and your whole life will be successful. Or as even Prabhupada said to the hippies in the 1960s, chant his mantra, and stay high forever. And of course, they thought high meant intoxicated high. Because just a little bit of information about the 60s, they would take this LSD stuff, you know LSD? And they would go into these trances for about 5 hours. They even had something more powerful called STP, which for a whole week they were in the trance. I was actually just reading the Prabhupada, Lee Lemmert, the Prabhupada was living with some man named David, who took LSD and he went crazy, and Prabhupada had to run out for his life because Prabhupada was living with this particular individual in a loft in New York. So anyway, so Prabhupada even said, stay high forever, and they're thinking, wow, that means I can be high like an intoxicated. But actually, Prabhupada was indicating high like Krishna Loka. So we have to be a little inventive in understanding how to preach. So sometimes we have to add Krishna consciousness to different rituals. Like you say, oh, you want to do pinda? Okay, let's do pinda. Fine. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. That's part of pinda, it says so in the Vedic literatures. Anyway, so it does say, Om Tad Vishnu Param Para Prasanchi Yat Surya, that all the demigods are looking to Krishna. So you want to do Ganesh? Fine. Ganesh wants to chant Hare Krishna. So, I mean, Ganesh keeps the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord on his tumuli. So there's ways to Krishnaize different things. So that's part of the Vaishnava's compassion. Not that you hit people on the head and say, you have to surrender now. I remember that's what kept me from joining the movement for 2 years. I came in contact with Prabhupada's movement in 1969. And the devotees preached too heavy to me. They said, you're in Maya. Of course, I didn't know what Maya was. I said, sounds good. I want more Maya. So, and they said, it's Kali Yuga. I said, wow, what does that mean? And they said, that means you're going to be as short as a dwarf, living underground, eating human beings, unless you join our movement right now. And I said, Hare Krishna. Oh, Vita's saying, I'm this German for goodbye. Ciao. And so it took me 2 more years to join the Hare Krishna movement because the people just like preached too heavy to me. Now, there were other reasons too, which I don't have time for in class. But anyways, so basically the only thing got me to join is that I happened to meet some pure devotee named His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And I said, wow, you're a lot better than those other devotees I met. Because you're compassionate, and everybody else was hitting me on the head with philosophy. So I said, let me join your movement and tolerate the other devotees. So I did it. So that's the point. Compassion has to manifest as an understanding of where the person is at and presenting Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. So any questions or comments? That's called Panchama Purusharta. So, in other words, we describe to people that the four goals of human life, dharma, that means mundane religiosity, you know, why are you doing this ceremony? Well, it's dharma. Artha. Why? Because we want to get artha. Money. And then finally, why do you want money? Moksha. Kama. You want to enjoy. I mean, what else are you going to do with money? Enjoy. And then some people just are so crazy, they're holding on to their money as they're dying. You know, they're dying. You say, well, do you think it's time for you to surrender to Krishna? No. Let me charge the devotees for coming to my house or something like that. Anyway, we know people like that, don't we? They're dying, they can no longer speak or act, and still they're holding on to their money. And they're thinking they're going to enjoy one day with their money. And then finally, moksha. That means everything gets so frustrating that you just want to give it up and become a sannyasi. You want to run away from home. That's called renunciation of the mode of passion. And then finally, and then the panchama purusharta is Krishna prema. And one obtains that by association with the pure devotee. And just one final story about that. I was just listening to the Jiva Dharma this morning. Very nice book. Who has to do my puja. And there was this one sannyasi who wanted moksha. He was living in Kashi. That's a place for sannyasis who are in Maya. No, sannyasi. Anyway, he had achieved a very high status. He was completely detached from the material world. He was on the Paramahamsa stage of Mayavad sannyas. Okay? So then what happens is he's thinking, I'm not happy doing this. And then along comes a Vaishnava chanting, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasini Gaur Bhaktivinoda. And then he says, wow, that's happiness. And then he runs to Vrindavan, and then eventually goes to Navadvipa and becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, and actually realizes his constitutional nature as a gopi. Pretty good, isn't it? And so that's a Mayavadi. Atmanamascha Muniyo Nigrantapi Rukume Kavanti Aitapi Bhakti Itambhuta Gunahari. Right? Yeah, of course none of you know that person except the rest of you know. That means those who are actually wanting moksha, or those who are Atmarama, taking pleasure in the self, they can be cured, saved by the qualities, name, and form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like Shukadeva Goswami, and this Mayavadi that's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and so many examples like the Four Kumaras, Tathusha. Okay, so any questions or comments? Questions, comments, arguments, problems? issues, aham brahmasmi, tatvamasi. That's what the Mayavadis leave us with. Just like we ran into a Mayavadi yesterday. And he wanted to invite us to his home to take some prasad. And I said, just water.
Going back to the story of the cave one, right?
Yeah.
Prabhupada has mentioned it's hard to sell a mirror in a blind society.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually good. Yeah, it's hard to sell a mirror in a blind society. Prabhupada actually was, he knew about this cave analogy because he knew Greek, and then also the devotees did an interview with Prabhupada when they were preparing this philosophy book where this work of Plato was described to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada liked this example very much. Because when people are in the darkness, that's all they know, just shadows. And they think, there couldn't be a real world out there. It's like sometimes I used to preach to my mother, and I'd say, Krishna consciousness is just happiness. She said, no, there's no such thing. You got to have good and the bad. But she was basically understanding the philosophy that, you know, Bhagavatyaga. In order to enjoy the world, you have to stop doing something to, and later enjoy, and then go back and forth, because you got this Chapalasukha stuff. Chapalasukha means flickering happiness. So in other words, if we want to enjoy breakfast this morning, then we can't eat before breakfast, because it'll destroy the fire digestion. So you have to fast. When you fast, you feel really good, like a janmashtami, when it gets to midnight, and when you get to eat, don't you feel ecstatic? I remember one janmashtami I was with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was keeping us up with not letting us eat. He was having us read the Krishna book to him, and you know, one chapter after another, Prabhupada was smiling, feeling very energetic, and the rest of us were saying, please, Prabhupada, pray in our hearts, let it end soon. Because we weren't taking the nectar of Krishna Katha, we were taking the nectar of our stomach acids that we wanted to eat, because we were absorbed in the body. So eventually, at about 2 or 3 in the morning, Prabhupada looks around, sees the rest of us. And Prabhupada says, all right, we can end now. And everyone went, Jai Prabhupada! The loudest Jai Prabhupada I've ever heard in my life. And then everybody just dove into it. And Prabhupada understood that. Because when they were preparing prasadam for the feast of the midnight, originally they were preparing just like non-grain Akadasi type of stuff. And Prabhupada asked, what are you preparing? This was at about 8 o'clock or at night. Prabhupada asked the cookers, what are you preparing for the prasadam? And they said, well, simple Akadasi prasadam. He said, no. Prabhupada said, no. It should be so heavy. Pakoras, halava, sweet rice. I mean, obviously, technically, you're just supposed to have Akadasi prasadam when you break the midnight fast. But Prabhupada understood that our attachment to our senses, he understood that we'd be very depressed if all we ate were baked potatoes at midnight. So Prabhupada made some concessions for us. Anyway. Yeah, so, yeah.
You mentioned about Vasudeva Datta, he was so universal.
Universal love, yeah.
He came to the stage of praying, there's a desire and I'm coming here.
Yeah.
What he desires to give is suffering for living entities. But this state is very exalted.
Yeah.
How can a devotee come to that state?
I don't think we can come exactly the same state. I mean, I'm not going to pray like Vasudev Dutt. Let me take everyone's karma. I got enough trouble with my own disciples' karma. Nowadays, someone says, well, I'd like to recommend this person to be your disciple. I said, oh, no. And not more karma. So, yeah, at least we should have some love. What I think is, well, actually what I say sometimes if someone says, I like to be a disciple, I said, maybe you should consider another room. I don't have that much love. Anyways, I'm just joking. So, at least we should be attempting to give people Krishna consciousness. We can't imitate these great personalities. It's not appropriate. Imitation is not appropriate. Following in the footsteps is appropriate. I mean, what Prabhupada was able to do, what Vasudev Das thought, you know, he prayed to take everyone's karma. In other words, suffer forever so that everyone else can be liberated. I mean, this is something like the love of a mother has for the child. The mother suffers, but she loves so much she doesn't consider it suffering. Like the child wakes up in the middle of the night. That's suffering. Someone wakes you up, goes, ah! I mean, if someone woke me up in the middle of the night, I'd kill them. Like when Goku came in and said, ah! Your name! I said, get the hell out of here! I'm sleeping, you fool. But because the mother, like Vrinda loves her child, so the mother, the child will go down in the middle of the night and she says, oh, it's so nice. Even though she's not getting sleep, you know, they go for months without proper sleep. You know, you get broken sleep, the mothers. You know, an hour at a time or 2 hours at a time. And then you have to, in the middle of the night, change diapers or something. Oh my God. I can't imagine that austerity. Isn't it? The mothers can do that. Fathers can't usually, unless they're exceptional. So you magnify that in a limited time, and then you have Vasudev Das, who is actually treating all of us like his children, and he loves us so much that he's willing to suffer forever. And of course, Lord Chaitanya said, you don't have to suffer forever. By your desire, the living entities will be liberated. So that's a Vaishnava. He doesn't really have to suffer. Of course, the guru does have to take some of the karma of the disciples, and sometimes Prabhupada said he gets bad dreams or some disease or something like that. So when one becomes a guru, it's like watching horror movies every night. You know horror movies? When I was young, my parents would send me to the Saturday matinee, you know, where they have the horror movies, Dracula, Godzilla, you ever heard of these things? You know, Ravana. And now you get to see it for free when you become a guru. Don't have to pay the theater anymore. You don't have to go to see to the theaters, the movies, because you get free movies. That's why gurus don't go to the cinema. Because they get it free. So, any other questions? Yeah.
Is it like mushroom midnight?
Yeah.
Would it be appropriate to take Ekadashi Prasad or
drink? Strictly speaking, Ekadashi Prasad is actually the way to do it. Although Prabhupada understood that we were very attached and he allowed grains. But strictly speaking, what I do, I mean, just to be frank, is I just eat some fruit. Because basically, just health-wise, if you eat heavy like that after fasting the whole day, it can really be bad for your health. So I just eat fruit. I mean, I haven't eaten a feast in like 10 or 15 years anyway. But I'm not going to ask the rest of you to undergo that same sort of austerity, because none of you would remain in the Hare Krishna movement.
Particularly in Fiji, like when the upset comes to a temple,
yeah.
They've been also fasting, so we have to accommodate.
Yeah, it should be full feast. Obviously, my recommendation is we offer people full feast. That means puris, halwa, jalebis. You have jalebis here?
Yeah.
Paneer.
Lanka, soy chunks. Yeah, everything. I mean, but it's up. What Prabhupada wanted is just leave it up to the individual to see. Appropriate austerity for an individual. But everything should be offered. But if the individual devotee decides to eat something more simple, that's fine. That's fine. And the main thing is to preach Krishna consciousness. Like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would sometimes give his disciples rice on Ekadashi so they'd have the strength to preach. Not that we should do that. But the point is that preaching is the essence. And utility is the principle. So, if you need to eat a full feast, eat a full feast. I'm not going to criticize. I'm going to eat food. So, yeah, but we should offer everything. We should have giant prasadam. we should have so much that they're filled up to the neck and even more. Prabhupada said that. Prabhupada said, because they're, Prabhupada said for new devotees, they should eat until they're filled to the neck. So just below the throat level. And, you know, when I joined the movement, that's the way it happened with me, too. I would eat so much that after I ate, this was prasadam, I had never eaten prasadam before, then I would have to lie on my side and groan in pain. And we probably gave the instruction, if you eat too much, you lie on your left side, not on your right side. Because the right side has the liver. Right? You're the doctor. And so we used to lie, oh, I overdosed on prasadam. Oh. Never again. But then we did it the next meal too. And we used to have big feasts 3 times a day when I joined the movement. It was nice. Except we were always falling asleep. Because we have many classes and off, and when you eat that much, 3 feasts a day, it was just like. So I would even learn how to sleep as I was driving a car. At the red light, you understand? I would stop at the red light, and then the car behind me would have to blow their horn to wake me up. I go, oh, okay. And I drive to the next light. So, anyway, so we have to be appropriate according to someone's level of spiritual advancement. Like that story of Balaam Rice. You know, in other words, to keep devotees enthusiastic, we should give it. Prabhupada said to one temple president, make sure everyone gets enough prasadam to their satisfaction and they're jolly. Prabhupada gave that instruction to the temple president. Jolly means they're very happy, and enough prasadam means is whatever they need to give them. Of course, after you've been in the movement 50 years like me, then it's a good idea to reduce a little bit, or else you can die. Prabhupada said many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahapurushottam. So, and you know, so we have this whole thing, Vachovega, Manasakravega, Jivavega, Udurupashtavega. So one has to ultimately do reduce. But in the beginning, feed them so much and don't let them stop when one first joins the movement. But after a while, you know, you honor prasadam, but after a while, eating is not such an important activity in your life anymore. When you're young, eating is actually your whole life. And when you get old, eating is just something you do to keep the body and soul together. Okay? I think it's time to end, right? Time for breakfast after that.
One question, Mark.
Yeah.
When we talk about like pure devotional service, like also they were definitely performing. So we might, like, as we are Krishna conscious, like Krishna love even. We might like not be able to love everybody.
Why?
But we should not hate anybody. Might not be practical like love everybody maybe.
Why not?
Maybe in terms of whatever we have, but we shouldn't hate anybody.
No, we shouldn't hate anyone, but we should. But being neutral is not. We should love everybody. Why? What's the problem?
Yes.
Krishna is in everyone's heart. Isn't it?
It's good that we should love, but if this is not possible, then
yeah, but it's not possible. The second best is not to hate. But how do we get to that neutral platform? It's very difficult. One, it's better to easier to love than just to give up hating, because giving up hating means you got nothing there. That's very hard. It's like Sunyavadi, basically. So, my experience is you either love or you hate. You get 2 choices. Because the only way you can give up hate is by seeing Krishna in their heart and seeing how they're suffering. And that is automatically love. Isn't it? I mean, I don't know how to give up hate without loving. I don't have a method. I mean, you could be neutral with someone who you've never met yet. But someone who you interact with on a regular basis. Let's say someone comes up to me and, you know, wants to hit me. So I don't know how to be neutral about that. I know how to be loving, but I don't know how to be neutral. said, oh, Shanti, Om Shanti. What is it? Yeah, all I know is that, you know, Krishna's in your heart, you're in Maya, you're suffering yourself because your anger is causing you to suffer. I pray to Krishna, that's love. But love is not something mundane. Oh, I just want to hug you. That's... Because our conception of love is something like, you know, you just want to kiss someone or embrace them or something like that. But love means to be concerned for their welfare. Just like the story of in the Bible of Solomon. Solomon was a great wise person. So two ladies came to him, and they were claiming that this particular baby belonged to each one. So he's a very wise person. This is a story from the Bible. And the lady says, my baby! You know, the lady says, no, it's my baby, my baby, my baby! And Solomon said, well, let's make a deal. We'll cut the baby in two. And you can each take one half. And this is not the story of Jarasandha either. So he said, we'll cut the baby in two. And the real mother said, let the other lady take the baby. Because she was more concerned with the welfare of the baby than with her own having the baby. And Solomon said, now I know who the real mother is. And the rascal, he said, you go to prison. Anyway, the mother who was claiming to be, the lady was claiming, he rejected her. You understand? Because the real mother is interested in the welfare of the child. So that's how we should be. Chita Sangha Dosha Vedanacha. Yeah. Swamba Yukta Sukha Dukha Sangha the Sansu Muda Padamamya. Yeah, how to get out of the material world. That is actually Krishna's instruction how to get rid of the banyan tree. Nirmana Moha, be freed from this desire for prestige. Also, mana can be also translated, they don't do that in the Bhagavad Gita, as anger, be free from anger too. Nirmana Moha, or illusion. Jitta Sangha Dasha, giving up bad association. Being absorbed in the eternal. Avyatma Nicha, Vinivritta Kama, giving up lust, the desire to enjoy someone or something. Giving up Dvandvara Vimukta, being liberated from the duality of the world. Like Sukha and Dukkha, happiness and distress. Sangha, known as Sukha Dukkha. Gachancha Mudha, in this way, someone who's not bewildered, Paramavyamta, he reaches the spiritual world and transcends this material world. Yes, that's a very nice verse. That's how to deal with the banyan tree of the material world. How do we reach the stage of loving everyone? By preaching Krishna consciousness. Because when you preach, some people will not appreciate it. And by preaching, you'll see Krishna in everyone's heart. And you pray to Krishna, let this person become Krishna conscious. I remember going out in book distribution, and I'd be praying to the super soul all the time. Please let this person take a book. Please, Krishna, let him take a book. I'd be praying to Krishna in the heart. So it's actually, preaching is for Madhyama Adhikaris. Kanishtha Adhikaris, their business is to fight with each other and worship the deity in the temple. They go in the temple, oh, my dear Krishna, and outside of the temple so much politics and things like that. That's Kanishtha. But Madhyama is, we have to save everybody, the whole world. Of course, they avoid people who are envious and causing trouble, but they don't hate them. They still love them, but they avoid them. So I think we have to end because it's time for prasadam, right? I have time to drink the deities. See what I'm thinking of prasadam. Anyways, that's real prasad. Real mercy is to see Krishna. And also take Krishna prasad.
For the devotees, Guru Maharaj, like the happiness and despair, it's like two values in this material world, which is the dharma of the mind. But for the atma, it's just like to be in the bliss.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevalananda Kanda, Vajra Vajra Bhai, Chaitanya Nitai. So just worship Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda and then Kevalananda Kanda, only Ananda Kanda. It's the path only of Ananda or of bliss. Because the body may give you so much distress. When you're young, you're thinking it's not going to happen. When I was a young brahmachari, I thought I'd never get old. Even though I was a devotee, I thought I won't get old. And now that I'm old, I'm thinking, how can I become young again? Let me take some medicine, health food, right? Chia seeds, goji berries. We're doing so much research how to become young, but it's not working. It's like, well, also, many years ago when my father was alive, he had plastic surgery to make himself young again. You know plastic surgery? You know, you get wrinkles when you get old. And then what they do with plastic surgery, they take away the wrinkles, they pull everything in. Like that. So you look, your skin at least looks, anyways, almost like you're young. But it looks like a mask, basically. Have you seen anyone have plastic surgery? You ever seen Vrindavan someone with plastic surgery? They do it in India, too. A lot of people fly to India to get plastic surgery. And so it looks like they have a mask and they think they've gotten young. But everything underneath is just as old as it ever was. It's like putting a new bag on top of the body, a mask on top of the body, but inside, it's still a mess. So, anyway, there's no hope in this world. It's hopeless. It's a hopeless world. Krishna designed it to be hopeless, so that we'll take shelter of him. It's nice. I mean, it's nice. The material miseries are mercy. It's wonderful. It's wonderful the material world is miserable, isn't it? Because this way we have an impetus to be Krishna conscious. All right, on that happy note, let's offer obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Jai.